Hello and welcome, everyone. You know, before we can get started on today's Afterthought, we need to thank our sponsors. Listeners, do you ever find yourself needing some legal advice and calling a lawyer or visiting a library or getting that advice from random angry forum weirdos just doesn't seem worth the time? Also, you're hungry and tired and need to shave? Well, that's exactly why there's Blue Nature Zoom. That's right, the only company on the internet that ships you a curated box of artisanal legal advice every month, all compressed into a pop culture storage mailer the size of a mini fridge. It's the Warby Parker of Stamps.com.
But can Blue Nature Zoom assist me with finally getting my website off the ground?
Yes, they can, actually.
Oh, well, that's great. That's fucking great. God damn it. Anyway, I'm here to fucking talk about Square Harry's Lease of Space, which you could use, I guess, if you're not too happy with Blue Nature Zoom, apparently, to design your very own website while never going to the post office or cooking food with only organic ingredients shipped directly to you in a box of affordable face razors. With Square Harry's Lease of Space, I was able to quickly build my new website about the hit new DramaCore mumble comedy movie People and Their Things, which stars friends of the show Mark Duplass, Greta Gerwig, Jesse Eisenberg, Bradley Cooper, Michael Cera, Miles Teller, Zach Braff, Emma Watson, Bradley Cooper, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Mike Birbiglia, Emma Stone, Ellen Page, Anna Kendrick, Kumail Nanjiani, Fred Armisen, Bradley Cooper again, Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, Tig Notaro, Cameron Esposito, Bradley Cooper, and Ben Kingsley.
Oh, hot shit! Are we brought to the people by that film as well?
We sure fucking are.
Great! Does it also feature the music of The Shins and Dinosaur Jr. and The Lumineers and Neutral Milk Hotel and Sixpence None the Richer and Claps and Hayes and Bonnie Prince Billy and The Mountain Goats and The Afghan Whigs and Bon Iver?
Are you fucking shitting me? Of course it fucking does. It's like a Time Life musical collection of all the indie shit your square-bearded nephew Briley loves. You want some Fleet fucking Foxes? You got it. A guy doing Elliott Smith covers and Manx with a hammer dulcimer? Well, duh.
Well, there you have it, listeners. Use the promo code Frankenstein's Dad to unlock 10% off some incredible legal chicken cordon Star Wars or a box of stamps and glasses. You can trust the products we're recommending because we use them, and we've got really trustworthy voices. Just visit bluenaturezoom.com/ourbudgetdoesn'tcoverfakewebsite/don't bother today and get 10% off your first purchase of gluten-free mattresses. Welcome to Afterthought, the podcast where every other week, I, Jeff, get together with my good friend John, and we discuss whatever the hell he wants. Oh, I can't even use this, and it's gonna, you know what, I'm using it. John's over there doing some kind of weird belly dance, and he's just throwing me the fuck off.
Oh, yeah, just grabbing hold of my bulk and swaying.
It's ridiculous. I'm pretty sure that's not what Michael Bublé was singing about.
That's what I was singing about.
Make yourself sway. Be real gross.
Yeah. Man. Look at that jiggle.
You remind me of that fucking fat vampire from Blade. Remember that's like Pearl or something?
Yeah. The big old vampire, which, you know, I gotta wonder, like, is that just way too much blood? How are you getting that much blood?
I don't think it's that much blood. I think that she was bit and turned... I don't know if Pearl's a boy or a girl. I'm assuming a girl. So was Pearl bit just as a colossally rotund vampire or mortal and turned into a vampire in that state?
I don't know.
Or is she just being kept super blood-filled so she's all crazy fat with blood?
Yeah, that's a weird thing. I mean, I don't know that vampire physiology turns excess blood into fat.
We're talking about a movie from, what, 1998 right now? So we might need to explain this to people. Folks, in the time before modern superhero movies, someone made Blade, which, once you stop and think about it, is insane that someone made it. It's a superhero movie that's hard R, that has a black male and a black female lead, and they don't fall in love or anything throughout the course of the movie, so it's not a romance lead for the female lead. And then it's basically sets up every cool fight scene in The Matrix 2 years before The Matrix came out. Everything that was possibly cool about the first X-Men movie about 3 years before the first X-Men movie came out. And is straight up amazing.
Yeah.
Also, at one point, there's a part where he finds a giant fat vampire named Pearl and, like, shoots a flashlight at her to make her angry.
Yeah, because it's a UV flashlight.
Yeah, so he's like, I'll burn you and then you'll tell me what I need to know.
And she's like, ah!
Ah, gross. And then later, a bunch of people explode into tiny skeletons of themselves that have wings.
Yeah.
There's some weird stuff towards the end.
Well, I also got to wonder, I mean, even if you did get bit when you were huge anyway, like, who was turning you? Who was like, oh, this is the person I want to turn into a vampire?
It's some vampire with a sense of humor. You know there's got to be one vampire that's going around being like, all right, what do I need? I need circus clowns. I need guys who look like Droopy.
But then, I mean, someone had to then go, fine, and then wheel that into some, like, wherever they were. Like, I don't even remember what Pearl was in charge of.
She was, like, their information person.
Yeah.
She sat in a room full of, like, monitors and stuff. She was, like, the, you know, like, how every CW show, the hero has to have a friend who's good with the computers.
Yeah, no, she was the vampire oracle, but also,
yeah,
like, looked like Mojo.
Yeah, yeah. It was basically Mojo on top, Chloe slash, you know, any one of those computer dorks on the bottom. Cisco slash, what's the one on Arrow? What's her name? You know, the girlfriend
you
one?
You know, Smoke. Felicity.
Felicity, thank you. Thank you so much for that. Smoak.
Yeah, Smoak.
Felicity Smoak, whose mom is a redneck and whose dad is also an evil hacker, I think.
Oh, he's the calculator.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, fine, whatever.
Yeah. And oh my God, spoiler alert, by the way.
Sorry for the spoiler alert, that show's evil, or a computer person has an evil dad who's a bad guy, which is entirely dissimilar from when they did the same thing on Supergirl.
Yeah, no, if you're a genius, it means your dad is evil. That's what it means.
Everyone's parents are either evil or unbelievably too nice on a CW superhero show.
Yeah, pretty much.
Think how much time you have to spend learning about fucking, like, Alexander Luthor on Smallville.
Man... But that was amazing.
Well, he's John Noble. He's not John Noble. I forget who plays him.
That would be amazing.
That would have been
John
even better.
Holy shit.
No, but the actor who played him is awesome.
Yeah, Michael Rosenbaum.
No, that's who played Lex Luthor.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true. No. Ah, damn. I was thinking of Lex Luthor,
I think it's something noble. I think his name is something noble.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, Lionheart Pettiheart Farer or something. Something noble sounding. Lionheart Gryffindor. I think that's it.
There you go.
Anyway, so Blade was this great movie.
Anyway, so this all ties into Promethean because it all has to do with
I never even asked
horror?
You what game we read this week.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think I even explained the concept of the show yet.
Man, if you've gotten this far into the show, you understand that the concept is pure nonsense.
So, yeah, what did we read last week?
So we read Promethean the Created.
And why did we do that?
Well, because it was one of the books that we had from White Wolf, by God.
And because it's White Ween.
It is indeed our White Ween.
This is another White Ween episode.
Yeah, everyone needs to get aboard our White Ween. You got to ride this White Ween all the way to the end.
This White Ween is leaving the station. It's a new century of White Ween.
So, Promethean.
Yeah, Promethean. Did we have anything we wanted to talk about on Promethean? I feel like maybe...
I do like that several people pointed out that apparently they did add robot shenanigans in some supplement.
There were two supplements that people have been mentioning to us. One of them added wood vamp, or it was like the concept that you don't need to be a dead body. So you could take the original ones and do them without dead bodies. Like, you could make a Tammuz without a dead body. And then they also added... wood dead guys, like, so you can make Pinocchios, and radioactive dead guys, so you could make, like, modern horror monsters, like your Godzillas and what have you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was in the book anyway, the nuclear
right.
ones.
That's, you know, to me, that's not Godzilla, is it? That's like 1950s, like, Corman movie villains. The Incredible Melting Man.
Yeah, it's just radioactive man.
He's just got some radioactivity because he sat in a hallway that they had dressed up as a spaceship for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
obviously
perfect for those sorts of things. So... I don't know. People also, in great detail and at length, pointed out, I think like 17 times, that we forgot about the concept of Frankenstein's dad.
Yeah, which really makes us a Frankenstein's dad.
Yeah, we're the real Frankenstein's dad's monster today.
The real Frankenstein's dad's monster is us. It's no longer alcoholism.
Gotta be honest, folks, you're way better at remembering our jokes than we are. We've been talking about getting a big whiteboard in here, and every time we get a running joke going, we got to put it up on the board so that we don't just entirely forget it.
Put it up on the big board.
I mean, was the last time that we had, you know, the thing where we talk about goats? It's not even that. It's donkeys. Remember? When was the last time we did donkey talk?
I don't know.
It's not right now.
No, for certainly not.
I mean, this is definitely...
I mean, it might be goats.
John, are you ready for some bloviating on goatiating?
Man, I would say no, but you almost got me on board with that title.
Too late, it's already happening.
I am a simple goat. I live on the back of a pickup truck.
So, goats. Nature's menace or modern miracle of...
Modern Prometheus.
the modern Prometheus, the goat.
Stole nature's own fire and ate it in a can.
And a hat that you had. I don't know that much about goats other than I find them adorable.
Yeah, goats want whatever you have.
Yeah, anything you got, they'll take it because they're hungry.
Yeah, they're like, hey, what is that, something? Anything? I'll eat that.
You want to scratch me on my head? I do not care in the slightest, but I also won't move away.
This isn't good. It ain't bad. I don't care.
This is fine. It's fine that you're doing that. Just leave my weird neck dingles alone.
Don't touch the neck dingles.
And don't you look too deeply into my terrifying rectangle eyes.
My weird eyes that just, like, make you think, oh, this is the devil.
Or, like, I could put a USB in there. That's what I think every time I see a goat eye. I'm like, oh, USB drive. Oh, no, wait, it's made of squishy goat eye. I can't do anything with that.
I am a simple goat. I live on the back of a pickup truck.
I don't know if that one has legs.
No, probably not.
No, I think that's the only episode of... Well, I think we're actually going to probably have to call it Bloviating on Goats We Hatin'.
Yeah, hating on goats.
It's specifically a discussion of goats we don't like.
Yes.
I can't... let's see. Those mean goats from the Diablo games.
Aw, mean goats.
And they're always like... And then you have to hit them until they drop like a gray thing. And you don't care about it. And eventually you don't even get the gold that they drop. Because you're like, fuck this. I've got Diablo on lock. There you go. That's the Diablo story. So, that's
right.
People got mad at us for not saying Frankenstein's dad enough times, which I apologize. That's on us.
That is definitely on us. As soon as the first time it was mentioned, I was like, God damn it. I can't believe we forgot that. Man.
I can. I mean, I literally just forgot that we have a thing called Donkey Talk and made a reference to goats.
Yeah, you certainly did.
That's where my brain is at the moment.
It's good. It's a good place for your brain to be.
So we also had one really interesting discussion prompted off me complaining about how most White Wolf, like World of Darkness games, are the same game.
Mm-hmm.
Where like you can do the formula. You take one thing, split it into five things, come up with a thing that's their power, and then just sort of smear goth all over it.
Yeah, kind of.
And their suggestion was Hulk the Gamma-ing or something. That was like
Banner the Hulking.
Banner the Hulking, which was a Dreadlord Bunny thing from Twitter. And I thought that was fascinating. And John and I have been arguing back and forth about it.
Oh, yeah. The second either of us saw it, just independently, we immediately began writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us.
Yeah, and then we started messaging each other on Instant Messenger somewhere, and we immediately had strong disagreements about the right way to do a White Wolf Incredible Hulk game.
Yeah, where everyone's Hulks.
Everyone's is Hulks. And okay, so the core disagreement boils down to John believes that it's okay for multiple archetypes to be based on Bruce Banner, because as the iconic Incredible Hulk, he's been a number of different types of Hulks throughout the years.
Yeah.
So it only stands to reason that a lot of the Hulks aren't Banner Hulks.
Exactly.
Now, my belief is that even if the other Hulks aren't as important, they deserve equal representation for the purposes of creating archetypes. And so for me, I feel like each Hulk should be based on a different person who has been a Hulk at one point or another in the comics.
See, it doesn't matter who the other ego of the Hulk was, because we're just caring about the Hulks.
I don't think that's true. I think one of the core elements that defines the Incredible Hulk is Bruce Banner. There's a duality to his nature. There's a duality, and there's a huge difference between Bruce Banner, who does not want to be the Hulk, and Jennifer Walters, who is so into being the Hulk that she's never not the Hulk.
Well, there's the difference really here is that's the comic book thing, but we're talking everyone, like, because it can't just be... If you're a Frankenstein, you are literally just the Frankenstein monster.
Mm-hmm.
In Promethean, you have to have that as an archetype of sort of like, well, there's the personality of that, and kind of the idea of it, but then we have to open it up to anyone.
Right, yeah. And while I fully agree with that, I like the idea of each one of the classes having an iconic archetype character on which to be based in the first place, just so you have sort of, you know, your Swan or whatever his name was, the Eclipse guy who did martial arts. Like, you have that iconic guy. You have your, what's that knight cast with the bow and arrow and the hair?
Harmonious Jade.
Thank you. There we go.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, all right, the five archetypes I would do are Bruce Banner, the Hulk, and then Jennifer Walters, the She-Hulk. And the archetype difference isn't that she's the girl Hulk. It's that these Hulks don't like to be human anymore. They aren't quite as hulky as real Hulks, but the big difference is that they're Hulks all the time.
And then you're a Hulk. You're a Hulk all the way.
and
from your first gamma blast to your last dying day.
Musicals. And then Red Hulks, which are based on Thunderbolt Ross and are militaristic and a little more aggressive. Abominations, which are tough and gross and misunderstood. And then, just go on like that. That kind of thing. Samsons, which look like humans but still get to be at least a little bit stronger because they're based on Doc Samson.
See, whereas I left him out entirely of mine because he's not a Hulk. He's just Hulk adjacent.
You know
he
what?
Would be in a splat book.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. I have replacements that aren't Bruce Banner. At that point, I just go to Hulkling.
Hulkling, I also feel like, could probably just be in his own splat.
Sure, that's fine. But
because he's not a real Hulk.
Oh, he's close enough.
He is a Skrull.
I know he's a Skrull. I mean, I could bring in Scar if I need to. I've got Hulks for days.
Yeah, but what you don't have is Mr. Fix-It. And that, my friend, is a great archetype.
Oh, you're right. Grey Hulk and Mr. Fix-It are both really good archetypes, although they're very similar.
Well, no, I would just have standard Green Hulk, Mr. Fix-It, and then She-Hulk and Red Hulk, and I could be talked into Abomination being one of them, though I do feel like that's probably something you'd want to leave
for a villain.
For the Dark Mirror villain, which they all exist, whether it's the
Abyssals,
like, the
Black Spiral
Pandora,
Dancers.
Or the Abyssals, or the La Sombra, or whatever.
You know, another thing, this is going off the away from the Hulk discussion. When we were spending all of our time in the last episode spieling off the different White Wolf games that exist in the World of Darkness storyline, there's one that we never mentioned. And I didn't realize it till afterwards. I completely forgot it existed, and that is Mummy.
Oh, yeah, Mummy exists.
Yeah, we never talked. We never once said Mummy.
No.
And, you know, I went and looked into Mummy afterwards once I realized it was another thing that exists, and it is confusing as shit. I can't figure out what's going on. The one thing I can tell is it started out as a vampire splat. So in the very beginning, you could play as vampires that are mummies.
Well, the, like, mummies were always one of those, sort of like werewolves. It was one of the antagonists for vampires that if one showed up, it would just wreck your day.
Yeah.
But and then they decided, nah, we'll just turn that into a splat.
But from what I can tell, there's like five types of mummies you can play, and then later on in one of their own splat books, there's like a way that the mummies are brought back to life so they don't have to be like bandage guys, and so they have like the gift of life mummies you can also play. Because Lord
Great.
Knows, you need lots and lots of mummies.
So many, and they need to be alive.
Yeah, you need to be able to play as the one-armed dumb mummy that says, let's kick some tut.
Yeah, obviously.
You know, I don't even, having watched an episode of Mummies Alive in the past 2 days, I can safely say that all of them are the dumb mummy. I couldn't believe, watching one episode, I was like, I can't believe how stupid every single character on this show is.
Yeah.
Like, well, everything they do is dumb as shit. I was almost to the point where it's like, is that the gag of this show? Is this supposed to be like a Pinky and the Brain thing where these characters are childishly stupid? Or is it supposed to be like, or is it just that these guys are really bad at writing an action show?
Probably that, because the villains were all like, completely non-threatening, childishly stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then the heroes are also that.
Yeah, the only character that wasn't was the kid, which I don't understand. That's the thing that gets me the most whenever I try to watch these like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shows that are not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
The first thing they do, here's how you write one. Pick another kind of thing that you could have four of. All right, you good? All right, y'all set? Sharks, mummies, whatever, who cares? Okay, add an adorable kid.
The kid is important.
Why? There's no kid in Ninja Turtles. When they copy it, the first thing they do is fuck up and add a dumb kid that everyone hates.
Well, yeah, because they're like, well, we need to have a kid. And the kid's like, yeah, I'm in charge of these cool badasses, and I am the tabula rasa that the child will put themselves upon.
I'm a 90s sort of like blank slate you can build off of. I get to ride in the cool vehicles available at Target.
Also, let me just say, the one episode we watched of Mummies Alive, the climax of that is them shooting, like, a 12-year-old with a laser beam.
Yeah, there's, like, a little girl that had figured out about the mummies, and so they had to shoot her with a memory-erasing beam, the implications of which are terrifying.
They're like, oh, and we've got this staff that shoots a big green laser, and we're just going to shoot you with it. Like, yeah, holy fuck.
Because you figured out what's going on, and we can't have that. And the one thing that we should probably have on this show is a gun that erases the memories of children.
Yep. Oof. Terrifying.
Anyway, we're so far off the rails that, I don't know,
far off the rails that we don't even know what these rails are for anymore. Yeah. I don't even know what are on rails.
What goes on rails? Some kind of crazy straight line car?
So what is this?
I'm from the modern era, man. I don't know from trains.
Oh.
All right. Would you like to answer some questions from well-meaning listeners at home?
Well, we may as well.
All right, let's get started.
Let's start her up.
I will begin.
Will you?
I will. Hello there, John Jones and Jeff Hardy. Your shows are awesome, and after having listened for long enough, I think it's time we took our relationship to the next level.
Yes, third base.
Well, that's fine. If I don't like you, I've got this laser I can shoot that erases your memories, so we're cool. That's right. I'm going to ask you some questions. First of all, do you have any advice for aspiring GMs? How do you go about making sure that everyone is having a good time and improvising when players inevitably find their way off the rails? Oh, we don't know it. How to keep people on the rails? Keep them away from us.
Man, the big thing is just talk with your players. That is the biggest thing, is talk with them, find out what they want, find out what their characters are going to be like, and honestly, the first couple sessions, don't worry about it. Just be like, this is the test run of the game. If you guys go completely bonkers off the rails, that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because one of the things I see the most when I'm perusing the internet is all the people who are like, my players are going way off from my assigned story. What stupid punishment can I assign to them for this?
How can I make a god zap them until they go back onto the right path?
And then there's always these people that are eager to tell you how that you can be a dick to your players for, like, no reason. Because remember, when you're playing a role-playing game, you are adults or nearly adults.
Yeah, and I mean, the next thing he asks is how much prep is too much and how little prep is too little. If you go into the first session with, I have the entire story mapped out already and I need my players to do this, and the only way that they can do this story is by following very set paths that you have,
mm-hmm.
You've done too much prep, because the second you're like, oh, I tell them that there's weird rumors going on in the town nearby, and then maybe there's some sort of invasion or whatever. They're going to go, oh, an invasion? Sweet. Well, instead of going to that town, I'm going to go into the forest and look and see if I can find something that's going to help me with this invasion. And you're like, why? Why are you going in the forest?
What is useful in the forest to stop invasions? I don't know. Sticks?
Oh, I have carpentry as a skill.
Look, I'm trying to raise an army of woodpeckers.
Yeah, no, your players will do something stupid. Do not worry. That will happen.
And it's okay. It's interactive storytelling. Let it roll for the first couple of adventures, and it'll really give you the tone of what your players want.
Yeah.
So that's good. Let's see. Next, I recall one of you, I think it was John. It was not. It was me. I know. I was going to let that finish out. it was actually Jeff, who said that they liked Steven Universe. I'm really curious as to who you think is the best gem and what your favorite episode is. You know, I actually can't think of a favorite episode off the top of my head.
It's probably because they all blend together and are terrible.
Well, no, it's because it's a very gestalt-y show, and the things I like about individual episodes, I like about most of the episodes. I really like the music for that show. It's such a nice, kind of low-key, almost synth-wavy sort of music, and it really appeals to me. And I like the characters, and what do you know, most of the characters I like are in every single episode, so it's fine. I'm going to go, and you have to forgive me here, true Steven Universe fans, I do not remember the names of anything, let alone like the people I meet, let alone like the creator of the names of the episodes. But the one where they escape from the big hand-shaped spaceship, and Garnet has a really cool song.
Great.
Yeah. People are going to know exactly what I'm talking about.
Awesome. I liked the one episode I've seen where I didn't actually like it.
You don't care for it. That's fair. I'm not. It's not like it's. I'm not the person who's going to stand on Death Hill for this one.
Good.
But I like the show a lot, and that's the episode I like. That I think the song's called "Stronger Than You," and I really liked it.
Okay, but what's your gemsona?
Oh, Jeffite, and my gemsona is that I menace Sailor Moon.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm a sexy, like Bishonen style bad boy with a weird skin color, and I menace Sailor Moon. And I mostly spend my time off planet going like, we'll get those sailor scouts.
Good. I think I've read that.
I'm Jeffite. I'm a mineral, I believe.
I don't have any powers.
All right. Let's see. Finally, you've summoned the amazing magical power to summon perfectly cooked, amazingly tasty hot dogs. There is but one catch. The bun always has clown nudes. People remember our jokes way better than we do.
Right?
We never do a clown nudes reference anymore. It's high time we did a little bit on some clown nudes. Right here on White Ween. And you know what? There's no better time than to get some grease paint White Ween up together.
Yep.
With a nice round honky ball at the end.
Get them honky balls for your White Ween.
The bun always has clown nudes toasted on it. Do you eat the hot dog knowing that these clown nudes will be inside you? What?
I would rather have them inside me than in front of me.
I would rather have a clown nude in front of me than a frontal clown nude fluidity.
Yes. Excellent.
So yeah, that's where I'm going. I would also eat them because that actually sounds pretty tasty, and I don't mind having clown nudes inside me. They're already in there.
They are there. They are within all of us.
They all float down there, John. Everything floats. Which is why I take this Mylanta. That all came to us from Tony 20 Toes. So thanks so much for your questions. John?
I might have asked this question or similar before, but which is better? A generic RPG system which can run any setting perfectly fine but has no flavor of its own, or a super specific system which could only ever run its particular niche, but is perfect for that one task? And I do think we did answer this before.
I think we've either answered it or something similar to it. Let's just keep it short. I prefer niche systems. What about you?
Yeah. Generic ones are fine.
You think back to every time that we've ever talked about a super generic system and how bored we get, and there you go. There's your answer.
Yeah.
That's why we've never reviewed just like GURPS.
No, it's a generic system might be good for, you know, Fate, which is a generic system. Yeah, it's fine. It's good for putting other things in there. But the super niche ones, I'm like, but there's something to dig your hooks in.
Yeah, the super niche ones are really great for launching a game for you. So that's, and plus, they're more fun to read. And since my job these days is to read role-playing games, I'd rather read the interesting ones.
Yeah. And that was Fuzzy Gundam.
Thank you so much. Next question comes to us from K-Smash. Hi, Jeff and John. I was hoping you could give me advice on role-playing different types of characters. In the 10 or so campaigns I've been in, I can honestly say I've only really played the same generic human action hero, just with a different hat. Actually, I kind of like that idea.
Right?
The dude who switches hats to do different things throughout the course of his game.
Yeah.
Like, he's just got a big backpack full of hats, and he's like, we're going to the jungle? Pith helmet. What tricks do you use to make sure that characters actually have character and are not just a cardboard stand-in for power fantasies?
Usually for me, it's find something that is going to be what they are based like on for their desire. Like, what do they want? Because if you're just playing a game where it's like, it's action time and it's punch a clock and I'm just going to punch a guy, then all your character is going to be the same if all you do is go, well, how am I going to beat up people? Because then you're going to be the same guy, just with different ways to beat someone up.
Yep.
You have to come up with a personality that is vastly different. If you realize that you're always playing the same action hero guy, specifically make someone in a campaign that's weak. Like, be a dude that is like, oh no, I made a coward.
I made an actuary. He's really good at calculating when these other heroes are going to die, and that's why he doesn't help them. Well, granted, you never want that to be the case. The worst thing you can do is build a character that has no reason to hang out with the rest of the party.
No.
So a lot of the time, what I like to do is look at what other people in the party are making and then build something that's an interesting counterpart to one of those characters.
What I like to do is make a dark mirror of one of the other players. And
then steal their stuff.
What I want to do is hold up a mirror to society.
What I like to do is figure out what one of the other characters is going to be, make the same character and then just copy them throughout the course of the game.
And then make sure that I introduce my character first.
I'd like to hit the orc as well.
I also hit the orc. I hit the orc first.
I do a better job. I hit the orc the same way that guy did, but better.
Cooler.
Cool. Much cooler.
Better hat.
One of my tricks is, well, it's not really a trick. It's a personal preference. I don't play humans unless it's not an option not to. If I can get away with playing an alien, I always do, or some kind of monster or demi-human or what have you. I don't care for playing as humans because it's easier for me to write interesting stories when it's not just the same old generic, you know, oh, peasants, our village has been raided by orcs and I hate them to hell and I shall forever crusade against orcs and their ilk.
Wah.
Ilks just sounds like another kind of orc to me.
Yeah, and the ilk.
Got them ilks.
2D12 appearing.
2D12 ilks have appeared. Also, there is a half-ilk shaman.
Okay. Let's see.
I guess that's me. No, that was me. You're up.
Price was here, asks, how do y'all feel about the RPG dungeon world? It's cool.
I love it. I finished reading it fairly recently, and I thought it was a really interesting read. I'm very much looking forward to getting my hands on a copy of Apocalypse World.
Yeah, I like the fill-in-the-blank world as a thing.
Yeah, yeah, I think they're great. I mean, it's there are points where it's so nebulous that it leaves a little bit up to the imagine, a little too much up to the imagination. But overall, that's the sort of thing where you would hear me complain about it in a game where that never happens. So I'm a huge fan. I look forward to trying it sometime.
Yeah. Also, if you were stuck on a deserted island with nothing but hot dog trees, how would you escape the island? The answer is I wouldn't. Because I have no useful skills, and I would die there.
Why would you die? Why would you want to escape? There's hot dog trees.
Yeah, but they're like island hot dogs.
Oh, okay, hang on. Let's start by defining. We have lots of time. Let's start by defining a hot dog tree.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's gonna be like when you find those banana trees that haven't been cultivated by people, and it's just shitty, tiny bananas that suck. So it's going to be these hot dogs that haven't been cultivated by our hot dog farming ancestors.
So you're saying that these are wild, feral hot dogs?
Yeah, these are island hot dogs. It's like the Galapagos of hot dogs.
Oh, okay. So if you go swim to the next island over, the hot dogs will have a slightly different adaptation so they can eat a different kind of seed?
Oh, yeah. There will be hot dogs over there where it's like, oh, these ones are longer and pointier. And then you find hot dogs that are like, oh, these ones are stout and have a harder shell.
Okay, so, but hang on, I really do need to define the concept of a hot dog tree. Is a hot dog tree a tree shaped like a giant hot dog, or is it a tree from which hot dogs sprout?
No, it's basically a palm tree that has hot dogs coming off of it.
Do they have buns?
No, you have to get the buns yourself. However, bun bushes.
There are bun bushes. Oh, okay. I was thinking that buns are something you got out of the ocean in this situation. Or is that just how you get condiments?
Fish for buns?
No, it's... Okay, fine, there are bun bushes everywhere. But in order to get condiments, you have to grab sea cucumbers and squirt ketchup out of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're going to get relish out of that from the sea cucumber. Come on now.
Of course. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Then you're going to need like a clownfish, and they'll squirt a mustard ketchup mix.
Yeah, obviously.
Which, bleh. But, all right. So the idea is, what would you use to escape on an island that has nothing but hot dog trees? Now, let me ask you this, because I actually do have a number of survival skills. I'm a fucking Eagle Scout. Suck my dick.
It's amazing how often that pickup line works.
More than you think. It's one of those pickup lines that works really well on dudes, which I'm fine with. It's just that it doesn't work on the ladies. Ladies don't care. You're like,
no.
Lady, I'm an Eagle Scout. Let's get you on your knees. And they're like, no one cares.
No one gives a shit about that.
But with dudes, they always just, they don't care if I'm an Eagle Scout or not either, but they appreciate the confidence.
I appreciate your candor.
I like your honesty. I like your moxie.
Excellent.
So, as an Eagle Scout, my questions involve things like, is the wood from a hot dog tree also made out of useless hot dog meat?
No.
It's made of wood?
Yeah.
Well, then I guess my answer is going to be that I'm going to build myself a raft out of hot dog trees.
Say, I would try to do that, but I would fail and sink into the ocean and die.
I mean, I probably would several times as well, but it's
yeah,
not
you
like
would probably sink into the ocean and die
several times. No, because I'm an expert swimmer as well. I played water polo in high school and halfway into college before I got all fat. And even then, all that did was make me be better at floating. So I've got lots of time. I've got lots of wood. I have hot dogs to spare.
Oh, yeah, you've got lots of wood.
So much wood. Because this is a fetish of mine, is being stranded on an island with hot dog trees. Palm fronds coming out my ears. I can use those for all kinds of stuff. That's not because there's palm fronds on the islands. I'm just describing the state of my ear hair.
Yeah.
I'm old.
An old, filthy, disgusting man.
I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled as I go traipsing about in the water looking for relish cucumbers.
Yeah.
Proof rock. Okay. So there you go. Let's see. Next question from Alien Rope Burns says, were there any particular inspirations for your podcast or your review style? Who were your best influences, or alternately, your worst influences? Alien Ropeburn. You know what? We got two sets of questions for you here. I didn't even notice that till now. So if we get to the next one, and if I'm right, which I might not be, don't worry. We'll just keep answering them. So, John, who inspired you to do this show?
So most of my inspiration has actually come from YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
The listener questions that we've got now is definitely a thing that happens on a ton of YouTube shows. And I mean, it happens in podcast things as well, but...
You're not a podcast listener.
I'm not a podcast listener.
When was the last time you had a job where you didn't have to interact with customers?
Never.
See, that's the thing, is that I listen to podcasts constantly because I have a data job, and so I can sit there quietly and no one will talk to me for about 6 hours, which is enough time for me to listen to several podcasts.
Oh, no, that's not true. I did have one job where I was basically just... doing weird mapping work. So
oh,
I was like,
that.
Oh,
yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah, you could have been listening to podcasts that whole
time.
But
I didn't care about podcasts then. Or now.
Well, I actually was inspired by other podcasts, specifically movie review podcasts. I'm a huge fan of The Flophouse.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that I'm trying to steal any of their styles, because the three guys on that show have very unique styles that I don't really approximate. Honestly, my style on this show is just the way that John and I talk.
Yeah, mostly.
I mean, honestly, you would be amazed, people, if you were to encounter us in the wild, to see that we're just always doing this.
Yeah, there isn't really a point where we're like, oh, well, now we got to turn it on for the mic. We're just doing this. Like, we're walking to get a burrito and just coming up with the dumbest of shits.
Yeah. Half the show is just stuff we came up while we're driving around somewhere or arguing about something stupid. The other half is us complaining that we forgot the shit we said earlier today that would have been perfect for the show.
True.
So I don't really have a specific person that I'm emulating or anything like that. This is literally just the rapport that the two of us have.
Yeah. I would say...
It's infuriating to be around us, by the way.
Oh, yeah. We are awful. Awful people to be around.
We're great when you get us alone.
Yeah. But if you get us alone, oh, we are so loving and tender.
Yeah. Easy to talk to. We can have serious conversations about topics.
Yeah, but as soon as we're together, all of a sudden it's just topics about... how Batman would be in various different types of role-playing games.
Yep. Or just endless discussions about dicks.
Just so much dick.
Just dicks. So.
Dick jokes for days.
So there you go. I don't really... I mean, like I said, my inspiration to do the show came from movie review podcasts. The style of the show, you can probably tell if you go back and listen to the first episode. I thought we were going to be straight up like a serious interview, like Charlie Rose discusses role-playing games thing, where I was like... Today, we're going to discuss the Heroes Unlimited role-playing game. Mm-hmm, yes. John, you once played Heroes Unlimited role-playing, and I heard that you met Gwyneth Paltrow. Is that true? Yes. No, it didn't last. We've evolved into just being total jackasses on the air, and here we are.
Yep.
Next.
All right. So, just a ton of questions from Pocket Fox. Says, here's some more questions for Afterthought. Try to keep them short and simple this time around.
So we're just going to do these rapid-fire style.
All right. What are the most overlooked, underrated classes from each edition of D&D?
Oh, each edition, huh? Okay, so basic. The halfling.
Yeah,
definitely
sure.
The halfling, because no one wanted it, because why would you want to play a fighter and a thief? Thief was terrible. Just be a fighter.
Yep.
Great. Let's
psychic.
We go into first edition here?
Yeah.
Okay, first edition, the psionic.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true, because it was like towards the back of the book and it was stupid.
Yeah, no one even remembers it was in there.
Yeah, it's easy to forget. The third edition, the druid.
Second edition,
the druid. I mean, it's rad and everything, but the whole true neutral thing was a real hamstring that made it a hard class to be and to play.
Yes.
Third edition.
Underrated or overlooked, probably.
Underrated's going to be the bard. Overlooked is going to be the sorcerer.
It is impossible to underrate the bard in third edition. It is a garbage class.
Most of them are garbage classes. Anything but the wizard.
Yeah.
And then overlooked is the sorcerer, because why would you want to play a wizard with a slightly worse spell progression?
yeah.
Fourth edition, we can actually branch out a little bit here because it had so many different character classes. Yeah. And it's
Sword Mage, amazing. Only
one type.
Yeah.
Yeah, the really good tank one was the one that could teleport all over the place, but the rest of them...
I don't care. I really liked Sword Mage in general anyway, but that one overlooked a lot because it was in the fucking Forgotten Realms book, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Along with the with two of the Warlock paths are buried in there.
Yeah.
The Artificer also has that problem where it's stuck in the Eberron campaign class.
And gets nothing from then on.
Yeah, it never gets mentioned again, which is a shame because it was a super interesting class. Let's see, overrated or was it,
underlooked?
Underlooked. The Ardent, I would say, from the third book, the third PHP, which is the leader that's, the whole thing is, my emotions are so powerful that they power the party as well.
There you go. And fifth edition, I don't know and don't care.
Fifth edition, underlooked and overrated. The only thing that matters in that game is the Bard Wrestler.
Okay.
Because it's the best thing, because wrestling in that game is entirely done by skills, which means that the best wrestler you can possibly play is a bard, which is awesome, and is the only thing they got right.
Okay.
Right? Professional wrestler bard. Come on.
There you go.
Come on! So there you go.
What races would you like to see expunged from RPGs forever?
John, go ahead.
No more dwarves. We're done with them.
I love
dwarves. We've done dwarves, we're done.
Humans.
I know you were going to say humans.
Yeah, that's why I let you go first, because mine was too obvious.
Yeah.
Humans. I'm sick of them. They're boring. Let's move on to some neat stuff.
Combine two standard Monster Manual creatures together to form a new terrifying beast.
I'm going to combine the owl and the bear.
Good. Good job. You did it.
My new creature is called the Bear Owl.
It's a naked owl.
No, it's a dude named Raul, and he's a real bear.
Bear Owl.
Bear Raul.
Okay,
what about you? What do you got?
I'm gonna combine the red dragon and blue dragon and purple dragon.
There's already purple dragons.
I don't care.
And there's already owl bears, and you know what? It's okay.
Yeah, I was gonna make the electrum dragon, but then I realized they also had that.
They do. They already have that as well. I'm gonna combine the quickling and the tarrasque and make the fast rask.
Combine the quickling and the slowling and have a ling.
Have the medium ling.
Have a regular ling.
I'm going to combine the quickling and the giant porcupine and create the Sonic Hedgehog. This creature, on a as a standard action, has to go fast.
Yeah, it's got to.
It's got to go fast.
Using creatures from the Monster Manuals as player characters, good idea or bad idea?
Great idea.
Good idea. Not a great idea, but a good idea.
A really good idea, especially if you get the whole party on board.
Yeah, you have to have the party on board, because if you're like, we're four humans, also, this is our goblin, everyone's going to be like, oh god, kill that goblin.
That is one of the saddest books I've ever read, is that complete book of humanoids for second edition D&D, where it's like, here's all these humanoids you could play, but don't. And it's always like, oh, maybe one goblin is going along with you because he knows his way through the tunnels and you can kill him when you get to the other side. Here's how that player could be that goblin.
What do you consider the best non-Vancian magic or magic-like system?
I really like the ones that are very freeform and open about how magic works, where it's just like, hey, you can do anything that has to do with wind. Work it out with your DM what that means.
Yeah, I do like those. The systems where you're like, I don't know, you've got X amount of power. You can do this type of thing. Figure it out.
Yeah, I like those because it's nice and freeform. It especially works well when you give other players access to similar types of agency at the same time.
Yeah. What is the most horrific set of circumstances you can think of in which you find a hot dog that you would still eat? So how bad can you get and still eat a hot dog?
Okay, let's see. I'm going to say I would eat a hot dog that depending on how hungry I get, this is a really... Let's assume I'm starving.
Yeah, let's assume that.
Okay, we're starving in this situation.
Yes.
I would eat a hot dog that I found trapped in a dryer's lint trap.
Okay. I would eat a hot dog... Full stop.
I would eat a hot dog. Any situation. Okay, would you eat a hot dog that you had to fight to the death with a giant silverfish for?
No.
Okay, no.
All right. Now, would you eat a hot dog in a box?
Define box.
It's a large cardboard box.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'd eat
that. Okay, now, would you eat a hot dog with a fox?
Define fox.
It's a sexy lady.
Okay, yes, I'd eat that hot dog with that lady in that box.
Would you eat a hot dog? Okay, I'm done with this.
Like,
I'm done with the Seuss.
Because you were like, would you eat this thing in Fox News? They'd be like, nah, I'm just...
Nah, I'm okay.
I'm set, thank you.
Do you guys get any hate mail or argumentative mail about your reviews?
I've
occasionally.
Received, yeah, it's not common.
Mostly it's corrections.
We get a lot of corrections, which is fair because we have a very limited span in which to read these books, and we try to just get to the interesting stuff and put it on air. But people will oftentimes be like, hey, love
you
your show.
You got this thing wrong.
But you didn't put any of this part in. And we're like, yeah, you know, we know.
Yeah, it's fine.
We hope that people will read the books anyway if they're interested in them.
I mean, I do appreciate when we get corrected because I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that's true.
And that's something for us to talk about on air later, like the Frankenstein's dad thing. That was a horrible oversight. Have we received hate mail? Yes, actually, we have. I've deleted it very quickly when it happens, but I've received a very small amount of... what's the word I'm looking for here? Bigoted anti-bisexual stuff.
Yeah.
It's small enough that I don't even feel victimized. I'm like, oh, whatever, spam. Let's move on with life.
Yeah. No, I mean, considering the amount of people that have listened to us and the amount of time we've been doing this, the fact that it's been like three times.
Yeah. If at most, I'm so lucky and so happy. Thanks people for not inundating my thing with hate mail. I don't have to feel like Anita Sarkeesian does every day.
Yeah.
Life is just fine.
What kinds of afterthought questions are you sick of seeing? What kinds of afterthought questions do you want to see more of?
I'm sick of being asked how we do this podcast with these boxing gloves on.
God damn it. honestly, I'd say the ones that we get a ton of course, RPG related. But anytime where it's like, what do you think about an RPG? Like a specific one, especially if it's one we haven't reviewed, I'm like... Man, I don't know.
Man, just take it to that guy who asked us about Dungeon World earlier.
Right?
Look,
look, I hate when people ask us about RPGs or hot dogs or reference anything that we have said on the show.
Those are the worst.
That's the worst.
I like it when the questions are just people's math homework.
I really want, and I had when we first started doing Afterthought, I kept saying this, and I would love to get it, is just random, like, give me a weird story about your life type questions where it's just sort of those like, okay, tell me about a time when whatever, like weird first date questions. Like I want someone to give me questions you'd get on eHarmony.
So like personality questions.
Yeah.
I can see that. Fun life story questions are interesting. Granted,
like,
I don't
like,
want
give
them
me a question. When's the last time you shit yourself? And I'm like, okay, great.
I've got this lined up.
I have this on lock.
Now, when you say shit yourself, is it just a situation where you couldn't make it to a toilet, or does it have to actually go in your pants? Because there have been times where I've been like, I need to get this poop out somehow, and I've like pooped in a bag or something. Does that count as shitting yourself or no? Does it literally have to go down your legs?
No, it's got to be shitting yourself. Like, you can't just, oh, I pooped in a place that was weird, which is a different question.
No awkward
toilet. Like,
you
can get, where's the weirdest place you've pooped? And that's a good question.
Branson, Missouri.
Which I have done that. Don't think I haven't been to Branson, Missouri and used the toilet there.
All right, so let's see. I can't think of any questions off the top of my head that I'm very like directly tired of. Granted, what's your favorite RPG? That kind of thing. We get those questions fairly regularly still, and they just don't make it onto the show.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal because it's something that we've done a bunch of times already, and it's not of that much interest to people. But you're right. A setup for a fun story is a great question.
Yeah. Because then you can learn at least a little more about us or our weird interests that don't have to do with the RPGs, mostly because we talk about that shit all the time on System Mastery. So for the afterthought, I'm like, it would be nice to just, you know, talk about some random crap.
Yeah, like how much I love Tintin or John's encyclopedic knowledge of 80s X-Men.
Man, I really thought you were going to say how much I like tits.
Oh,
it's like, wow, okay.
I love tits, guys. Ask me questions about what kind of tits I like. The answer? All.
70s.
70s. 70s boobs are just fantastic. They're just the tits.
And finally, what are the best and worst parts of making the System Mastery, Afterthought, and Movie Mastery podcasts?
Reading the book.
Is both the best and worst part. The
worst part 90% of the time is reading the book because it's just boring. Or a lot of the time I'll realize what I'm going to talk about like on the third page.
Oh, yeah. You're like, oh, well, I know what my material is now.
Now I just got to read 400 more pages of charts and rules.
The best part of making Afterthought, as everyone knows, is the intro.
Yeah, the intro is the most fun thing that we do all. Every 2 weeks we get together and do those stupid intros. And generating those 2 minutes of us being jerks at each other is hours of work that takes that is the most fun thing we ever do.
And best and worst for the Movie Mastery... For me, it's the worst a lot of times is trying to find it. Or the other thing is I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret here. Just a little behind the scenes. I'm going to spoil some things for you. a lot of the time when we record the Movie Mastery and we talk about the teaser trailer that we just watched, and then we're going to go see the movie, we've already watched the movie.
Don't tell them.
We've already seen it, we're just bullshitting you.
Also, there's no Santa Claus.
Also, the Easter Bunny isn't real. It's just Jesus, and he's got bunny ears and a weird snout and buck teeth, and chicks come out of the holes in his hands.
He came back from the dead like that, and that's why the religion pretty much ended right there, when people were like, well, we're done talking about creepy bunny Jesus. But no, yeah, it's true. Honestly, we've been thinking about dropping the whole discuss the trailer beforehand thing as a format in Movie Mastery. Because
so much we end up watching the movie and we're like, oh shit, we forgot to do that.
Yeah, because we finally find the goddamn thing and we're oh, we managed to find a copy of Deathbed. Let's just watch this now and stop talking about it.
Look, I've got this hot and ready, and it is hot and ready. And I will be damned if I'm going to watch it. Teaser trailer and then record and then watch a movie.
I know, that's just not going to help, because by that time your pizzas are cold and distant.
Yeah. Much like my father.
You buy that hot and ready Little Caesar's pizza, and in about 20 minutes it's a cold and has a headache pizza.
There you go. That was Pocket Fox's whole ton of questions.
Cavalcade of questions. Okay, let's see. Next question comes to us from Havoc 4. Says, in the spirit of White Ween, yay, someone else is in the spirit of White Ween.
Yay, the White Ween spirit be upon ye.
If there's something I love seeing, it's White Ween in someone else's mouth. That's great. I'm happy that came up.
I just like seeing it even here on my phone. Just so much White Ween on here.
It's great. I'm especially happy that our fans are paying lip service to White Ween.
Anyway.
Okay. What is your favorite weird World of Darkness fan game or homebrew that got some internet fame? So, like, what, Princess the Hopeful type stuff?
Yeah, which,
Leviathan, I don't know. I don't know that much about them. I would probably say Princess the Hopeful, the magical girl one.
Yeah, because, I mean, if I had ever actually read Dungeon the Dragoning, then that would be interesting.
Isn't that one official? I feel like it was made by, like, their Black Dog imprint or something.
Nah.
No? Okay.
Nah.
So some other company that was making fun of them. I don't know. But, yeah, there's a whole bunch of these games out there. If you're not – whoever – the person who asked us this question, Havoc 4, is way more informed than we are, I guarantee it, about the fans' versions of White Wolf games.
Well, you know what my favorite fan WoD game is, though?
Hmm?
Is Banner the Hulking.
Oh, Banner the Hulking. Right. Not me, because the version you're talking about just has a bunch of different Bruce Banners you play as.
And David Banner.
Oh, now tell me, could you have one of them that's a David Bruce Banner?
David Bruce.
Dude, David Bruce Banner is his name on the TV show.
I know.
So it's not like I'm pulling this out of my ass entirely. At least I have a reason. Could you have a TV Bruce Banner as one of the characters that you play as?
Of course you could.
His power is that he gets hulked for stupid reasons.
The dumbest possible reason.
Someone made fun of his pottery, so he hulked out.
A raccoon knocked over a trash can near him.
He fell into a hot bathtub, and he hulked out instead of just getting out of the bathtub.
His friend is driving too fast in his motorcycle.
B. Arthur is giving too long of a lecture at a local community college.
There you go. Okay, so next question. If World of Darkness was the quintessential Gen X game, then what best represents millennials from Jarnagua?
Is it Fate? It's probably Fate.
For millennials, yeah, probably.
Fate and the World games. The games that... I'd say... Oh. What about Monster Hearts?
Oh, it's magic.
You know,
better believe it not so.
Got that in our heads now.
Okay.
Monster Hearts?
No, I'd just go with Fate, because it's the
pick a choice game.
It's the quintessential, you can do anything, your imagination is your only barrier.
Yeah, and the whole, like, who knows you better than you? That which means it translates into game terms to build your own world. Here's some basic rules, and then we'll just get out of your way.
Yeah.
99-cent microtransactions. I've never been all that comfortable with the difference between Gen X, Gen Y, Millennial, and so on, because I was born in, like, the last year of Gen X. So that means I never once identified with it, and yet I'm, like, 5 years off from being in the next generation.
Yeah, so, and I'm at the very beginning of Millennials.
Yeah. Oh, man, we're only like 2 years apart, and there it is.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, probably Fate.
Yep, probably.
Although I'm really throwing a lot of push towards Monster Hearts for this because it's a game because of the sex move.
Sex move.
Where if your character has sex with another
character,
you're
a sex haver.
Because it's something about how sex is becoming more and more out in the open and mainstream and sort of like part of the lexicon and the toolkit. There are games like that, like Apocalypse World and Monster Hearts, which is a world derivative that have brought sex and not just sex. Like, oh, the curtains pan away as a man and a woman, and you can see the woman's boobs, but nothing else. And then we know that they had sex in the distance. Instead, sex move is just anytime your character has sex with someone, you get these powers or whatever. And it's less judgmental.
They had sex in the distance.
I just pictured David Attenborough saying that.
And then they had sex in the distance. Yeah,
that was a little Steve Irwin, but it's okay. You know, as far as nature hosts go.
You know, as far as that goes.
All right. Let's see. That next one's me, isn't it?
Yep.
Great.
Get it.
Let's see here. This comes from Blake Scott. Are kilts in fashion fashionable in a hell we call Phoenix where the draft would be nice? Okay, so we'll start with that one. Are kilts in fashion?
Nope.
Will kilts ever be in fashion?
Nope.
Here's where kilts are in fashion. Are you a crazy, sexy, Scottish, or black dude? Then you can get away with wearing a traditional kilt.
And it's not really in fashion, it's just you can get away with it.
Because you're crazy sexy.
Yeah, you're already hot, and people are just like, oh yeah, okay, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter what you were wearing there. You could have been wearing a series of belts, and you would have been fine. That said, are we going to judge you from wearing a utility kilt?
Yes,
but quietly.
Ahead.
Fine. We're I've been to a Warhammer 40K tournament. I know what to expect.
Look, I've been around nerds long enough that as soon as someone shows up in a kilt and they're like, oh, but it's so functional. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Man.
Whatever. I don't even mention them. It's better to me when people who are wearing kilts do not talk about their kilts.
Yeah, which, I mean, rare.
You never see me walking around going like, cargo shorts. You know, the great thing about cargo shorts is you can wear them and you can
all these pockets.
You can put stuff in the pockets on your thigh, but you won't because it'll bonk against your thigh and you'll hate it.
I do. I put stuff in there. I put stuff in all my pockets.
But every time someone shows up with a kilt, they're immediately off the races like, this is an ancient garment from Scotland. It's got a fanny pack stuck to it that's called a sporran. I'm more comfortable than you, even though I'm just wearing shorts under this, because that's all it is. It's just something you put on over boxers. Wuss. Let your dick flap loose.
Oh, no, my dick flap.
All right, let's see. Is it better to ask on Reddit? Generally, yes, it is better to ask us all your questions on Reddit because it's a...
Because that's where Jeff can find it.
Well, because we have a sub-forum on Reddit for just System Mastery, and one of the topics on there is just afterthought questions, and it's real easy for me to go in there and scoop them up and put them on the show. So, yes, the best place to ask me questions is always on Reddit. And finally, I've finished Ringworld. Now what?
I don't know. Probably make dinner.
Well, wait, did you finish the book Ringworld or the RPG Ringworld? Because if you finish that second one, mail it to us. Because that game's expensive. If you're talking about the book Larry Niven's Ringworld, then read Lucifer's Hammer. I'm just throwing a random sci-fi book story out there.
Just throwing it out there.
Lucifer's Hammer, I believe, is Larry Niven and Arthur Clarke. I'm not sure. Do not hold me to that. It's a story about a meteor that falls and hits Earth, and then people go off and live in like the woods and horse ranches and stuff.
Excellent.
Except for the one part where like a Boy Scout troop like kidnaps a Girl Scout troop and then cohabitates with them. It's a good book. That one part's super creepy.
Good.
There you go.
All right. For this next one, I'm going to need Jeff to go get a D6, and then we will find out what our question is, because what we have right now is a table for afterthought questions. It is the random question generator for afterthought. And this came to us from Face Like Thunder. Thank you so much for that.
Okay.
And it's got a whole bunch of different things. We're going to put it up on the fridge eventually when we're done with this.
Mm-hmm.
But we need a D6 and apparently a D12.
No problem. I've got my giant bag of dice here at the ready.
Bag of dice.
Going to dump them out and find both of those because this die bag is primarily used for Exalted, so there's a heavy, heavy weighting
towards
10. Towards D10s, yeah.
Ah, look at that. Look at that pile of dice. There's nothing quite so satisfying. Here we go.
D6 and D12 located.
So, give me the first D6.
4.
How does Kevin Symbieta occupy a significant narrative position in...
2.
an RPG with comprehensive crossbow simulation rules that also makes a thinly veiled social commentary on, roll a d12,
one,
Holocaust denial. All right, so how does Kevin Symbieta occupy a significant narrative position in an RPG with comprehensive crossbow simulation rules that also makes a thinly veiled social commentary on Holocaust denial?
So I assume they're probably talking about his game it's probably System Shock, right?
Probably, so maybe?
We're probably talking about System Shock here, which of course has the most comprehensive crossbow rules of all Kevin Symbieta penned games.
Yeah.
I don't want to accuse Kevin Symbieta of Holocaust denial, so I won't.
But he does.
But John will. So this is a random question generator.
Yeah, so there we go. We're going to put that up. You can look at it.
I want to re-roll that D12 because Holocaust denial is real hard to tell jokes about without being mean to an author.
Hey, you know what? Roll me some more. Just give me the D6 again.
We're doing that again? Start from the beginning. Here we go. 2.
All right. How does the batting gentleman occupy a significant narrative position in...
6.
A LARP about OSR gamers fighting the addition wars that also makes a thinly veiled social commentary on...
8.
Miniature pigs, care and feeding thereof.
Okay, how does the batting gentleman...
Yeah, occupy a significant narrative position in a LARP about OSR gamers fighting the addition wars that also makes thinly veiled social commentary on miniature pigs?
Geez, I don't know. The batting gentleman is very busy. After all, he is Vengeance. He is a Fortnight.
Excellent.
So, yeah, random question table for us, which so far has stymied us twice.
Yeah.
All right.
Great. That is what the use of random tables are for, though, is to make it so that you just get some unusable nonsense.
Can I tell you, this is the worst D12 ever. It's gold lettering on a glittery white background.
Oh, that's excellent.
It is unreadable.
Way to find something that is terrible.
Yeah. All right, here we go. 5th edition D&D has departed from previous editions, at least 3.5 and 4th edition, in my own experience, in that the core books assume magic, both spells and items, are not common and generally not part of the economy. Gone are the days when players would flip through lists of magic items and save up thousands of coins for their desired object. Other than accepting payment for minor spells, the rules suggest a powerful spellcaster would ask the characters to complete a quest, such as retrieving an item, rather than accepting a cash payment. Likewise, finding someone to buy anything beyond a scroll or potion from is supposed to be problematic. Magic items are almost mythical and don't have an exact monetary value, so much so that the magic items in the game are not given prices. In your opinion, is this a positive or negative departure, Joshua Whitson?
In my opinion, I would say I actually like that as a way to go with things, but I don't know that it's particularly D&D-ish is the only thing.
I know. There's a thing about D&D where people treat it as a generic fantasy universe simulator because it's the big gorilla in the room, but it's not. It's not a good game for playing a Tolkien game, for example. It's a great game for playing D&D.
Yeah.
And D&D is a world where wizards know that they're wizards, fighters know that they're fighters, and everyone knows how much a +1 short sword is worth.
Yeah, you walk into a store, and in that store, you can go ahead and find yourself some +2 armor if you've got the gold for it.
Yeah, it's not like they set out for that to be... Almost definitely they did set out for that to be the case, because the very first games upon which D&D are based had those monetary values so that you knew, for example, a hammer of the Dwarf Lords is worth 12,000 gold, because 12,000 gold translates directly to 12,000 experience.
Yes.
And so in the early days, when gear literally represented experience that you hauled out of a dungeon, it made sense for everything to have these monetary values. And then that just sort of stuck around right from basic into first edition because that was still Gygax. And then from first to second edition because, as I mentioned before, the authors of second edition were goddamn wusses. And the only things they did to change the game from first to second were strip out the stuff that scared American Christians. So, like, the people who were doing the satanic panic at the time were like, this game has half-orcs and assassins in it. And so second edition was like, no, it doesn't. We'll just sweep those into different books, and there we go. And then nothing else changed. Third edition doubled down on it and added the whole the Diablo-style tables where you could roll things like this weapon is flaming or thundering or whatever. Fourth edition finally realized that D&D had set up its own universe and storyline, its own kind of economy and concept. And they took the people writing fourth edition took a lot of ideas from third edition, because third edition introduced what I think at this point we started calling dungeon punk. you know how you can tell a third edition D&D character when you look at the art, because they're like, what the fuck shield is that? It's shaped like a lightning bolt mating with an NFL team logo. That is not what real shields look like. Also, it's way too big. Your armor is made out of 15 different kinds of armor. And also, how many tattoos do you have? Is that a Jeff Hardy leather shirt? What is going on? Dungeon Punk. That's what's happening. Because at a certain point, the art aesthetic of D&D became the D&D art aesthetic. The magic system became the D&D magic system. So 5th edition almost feels like it's trying to back away from what D&D has evolved into.
Yeah. I mean, even just the setting of, say, Eberron is like this natural progression of taking D&D and trying to turn it into an actual setting.
Yeah. You know, Eberron is amazing specifically because it works that way. It's like, hey, man, over the years, we've made it so easy for wizards to do shit that it's stupid that there aren't train systems powered by fire elementals.
Yeah, so I think the idea itself is good. Like, mm-hmm. the whole idea of a scarce magic world, the, you know, you don't have to worry about, like, magic weapons price or anything, or saving up money to specifically get that, stuff like that. I enjoy that as an idea, mm-hmm. as an option for your game.
Yeah.
But it definitely, I mean, to go back to the 5th edition starters, it doesn't feel like D&D.
Yeah, if we want to become grognards.
Yeah.
We're going to become grognards of our very own. We're like, the game was better before they ruined it. Wizards of the Coast with their 5th edition. Which I do not want to do. It's just another game you could play.
No, it's why I'm like, I think the idea is great. It's just weird that it would be such a departure from the established way that D&D works.
Well, it's
which I'm fine with.
It's especially weird in light of how everyone basically the standard internet allegation is to wage against 5th edition is that it's like, whoops, sorry about 4th edition, everyone. Here's the game that competes with Pathfinder that you want so hard.
Yeah.
And then it's not that either, because 3rd edition was very iconic and very D&D-ish. Like, you knew how much your magic item was worth. The treadmill of magic items already existed.
Yeah, that was the whole point.
Of 3rd edition. It was a big thing in 3rd edition.
Yeah, you always
already
wanted to get new upgrades. You wanted to kill bigger monsters to get better items. You know, sort of like an MMO, but, I mean, maybe for babies.
Yeah. 3rd edition was what opened Pandora's box. 4th edition was all the demons flying out of it, sure, but the box was opened for 3rd edition.
Yeah.
And was hope left over in the box after everything? No, it was 5th edition, which is just nothing. There you go.
Hey.
I think that's all the questions.
There we are. All right. Yeah, I think we're done.
I think that's another episode of Afterthought in the Proverbial Can.
Thank you so much for giving us your questions. Of course, if you would like to give us more questions for the next Afterthought, which we would love to get from you.
Yeah, even after we bashed on all the different types of questions
even
you asked us.
I know that you're terrible at asking questions and are idiots.
Well, you know, I didn't get a chance to reiterate that my favorite type of question that people can send us is directly and obviously a question for someone else.
My favorite question that someone can send us is through Patreon after they've supported us.
Actually, that wouldn't be a terrible way to get Afterthought questions to happen, is to say that we have preferential treatment for questions that are delivered through Patreon by Patreon subscribers. But I don't want to do that. But what I do want is for people to send us questions for other people.
Send us questions. Questions for Spider-Man.
Yeah, send us questions for Spider-Man or Booster Gold. I don't care. Anyone. Send us anyone else's questions, because those are very different normally. Unless it's something like, Dear Spider-Man, what are your favorite RPGs?
Oh, man, I know that Spider-Man, fucking Peter Parker is a huge nerd. He has to have played some RPGs.
Dear Spider-Man, if you could eat a hot dog with a clown nude on it, but you have to talk to Frankenstein's dad, and then there's a donkey talking to you, and you get a tattoo of a juggalo. And
yeah. I have to admit, God, there has to be some issue where, like, Spider-Man and probably the Thing and Human Torch are sitting down and playing an RPG.
I would like to think it's just Spider-Man and some non-superheroes.
No.
He just has a weekly get-together with some regular folks to play D&D.
No. No, he's definitely not the type that's like, I found at my college one of those, like, come join our group things.
What, your character is level 9? Well, that's perfect. Our characters are level 9. Mr. Parker, you really must play Mazes and Monsters with us.
Then he goes insane, and it turns out that the DM is actually the Green Goblin and has been using gas on him to make him go crazy.
I found out he webbed up a helicopter between the two towers. And then they cut that from the movie, but it was in the preview.
Oh.
All right. So, yeah, as mentioned, if you have any questions, please send them to us. You can do that at a variety of locations. You can get them to us on Reddit, which I mentioned I really like. But you can also ask us questions through our email address, which is systemmastery@gmail.com, or systemmastery on Facebook or Twitter, or, as I mentioned, Reddit. All those places are great ways to get a hold of us.
If you're not on Reddit, go ahead and type Afterthought in there somewhere, hashtag Afterthought on the Twitter, or just put Afterthought in the title of the email. That way it's easier to find it.
Yep, easy for us to find it, easier for us to compile them. I've been really bad about it, but I feel like I might let John take it over.
Yeah, just let me do everything.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You do it. I'll just be the talent, you know?
Yeah, you know, I'll just sit here and look pretty on mic.
Man, if I could do that.
Man, if that was a thing I could do, pretty, that would be amazing.
But you know what else people can do is they can support us on Patreon if they want. Patreon.com/systemmastery. If you give us any amount of money whatsoever, it comes out roughly twice a month every time we put out a new episode of System Mastery. When those drop, you give us a dollar, we give you bonus content, new episodes. Usually two times a month, we put out half-hour bonus episodes where we make characters in the system that we just read.
Yeah, mostly it's stupid jokes, but occasionally it's something not as stupid.
Some of them have been pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you have suggestions for what you'd like to hear us do, we'd also like to hear those. So tell us how we can best reward you for being our listeners. We got one just the other day, people saying that we should do more interviews with game designers who wrote the games that we are reviewing.
Yeah.
Which, boy, they do not want to talk to us.
Yeah, no one's like, hey, So we're going to totally rip on your game. Do you want to come on and then have us rip on you as well?
I would love to see it happen, but so far the best reaction I've gotten from an actual game designer was Lewis Porter Jr. saying that we are, quote, those guys are crazy.
Yeah.
That's the best we've heard.
Man, we would be like the between two ferns of RPGs.
But, you know, they got Barack Obama on that shit, so I'm pretty sure we could get this done.
Yeah, let's get Barack Obama on here.
Barack Obama, what is your favorite role-playing game? And would you eat a clown nude if it was a toasted hot dog question?
Come on now.
Come on, let's get this set. Let's make it happen, Barack.
Barack Obama, tell me what you are going to do to get the Juggalos off of the FBI watch list.
Man, I just can't wait for him to not be president anymore. Not because he's not a great president, because I think he's a pretty good president, but because I look forward to his post-presidential life of just being the coolest fucking dude in the world. No longer required to do presidential shit. When the shackles come off Barack Obama and he just gets to say whatever he wants on talk shows and lecture circuits and stuff, it's going to be a glorious day. I look forward. Anyway, that's politics. Why don't we get off of politics and say
anyway, Jesus. Let me tell you about religion for a minute.
No, don't tell me about religion. We're good. We're all set. We're almost done here. We're coming in for a smooth landing. Anyway, that was the Patreon discussion. I think that's just about it. Otherwise, it's the middle of White Ween, so stay tuned for more horror content, including John's daily movie reviews of a horror movie in written form every day, all October long.
Every goddamn day.
I know, it's the worst thing, and you're somehow doing it, and for like 4 years now.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do this.
It's horrible punishing. As soon as I get to about this point in the month, I'm always like, God, why am I doing this? I should just stop. I've watched like 17 horror films at this point. Ugh.
So that's going on all month long. Horror content on System Mastery and only horror movies on Movie Mastery all month long. Right now, the winner, as far as we can tell, for the Movie Mastery episode coming out this month is Shin Godzilla, but it's not too late to change that. If you head to our website, you can vote on the big list page and change that all you want. Make us watch something else. It's not on the big list page. It's on the In Theaters Now page.
In Theaters Now, yeah.
There you go. Find it there. Register your vote. Otherwise, we'll have to go watch Shin Godzilla, which I should not have put on there because it's only in random, terrifying theaters that we don't even know how to get to.
Yeah, it's like one showing in a day in IMAX only.
Yeah, that was a big mistake, but whatever. We're going to go see it. Probably, unless the vote changes by tomorrow afternoon. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and have a wonderful week.
Man, I've been farting.